The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
Hello and welcome to the show. Just a little feedback, sir. So I'm going to turn it down and you let me know what you do on that side. But thank you everyone for joining. We're still getting feedback, producer. Hello? Yeah, we're still getting some feedback. So if you could just check on that. Welcome to tonight's show. Producer, can you just check on the feedback? And if you're getting any on your side, it's echoing. Okay, we already have people coming in online. I don't know if you could hear me, producer, but okay. Well, welcome to the show. Thank you for joining with me, Dr. Janotha Archer-Cartwright, for all things health, wellness, and things that pertain to the Bahamian society. Sorry, I did not put out a flyer tonight about what tonight's show is. I really wanted to talk about a mixture of things, so thank you for joining in. I have a really interesting clip from some infectious disease doctors over in Canada about them starting to voice their opinion. We're going to talk a little bit about COVID tonight and just what's happening. And there's something about what's happening with Dr. Fauci in the US. And so it's a pretty interesting time. And it just goes to call on, I think it's a period for us to now reflect on some of our own healthcare policies and what we can do during this time. I really think that we need to reassess and kind of start making some more changes. I see why a lot of our officials are traveling around the world, because there's a lot more places that are a lot more open. And so we're going to look into that. We're going to listen to that video, and I'm going to have an open line. So if you want to comment or participate, I'm going to open the lines fairly early for everybody tonight. So I want to thank our sponsor, Medical Concierge Services, for all your medical care needs, all your primary care needs, right in the Bahamas Heart Center on Collins Avenue. So you can check us out. The number there is 326-1521. You can find us on Instagram, Medical Concierge Services. We also do home care services, so we can come to you if you can't come to us, wherever you may be on the island of New Providence. We can come to you and we can help you out. And we have a lot of other interesting services. So check out our website, mcsfamilymedicine.com. We do a lot of IV vitamin stuff, microneedling. So some of the alternative things as well, and a bit more care. And in a couple of months, we're going to be introducing something new to our patients. We're going to make available. So I'll talk about that in the next over the next few months. But really just a lot of stuff that's kind of going on right now, and a lot of facts that we need to start kind of understanding about what's happening and facing those facts and the reality in the pandemic. For a lot of countries, the pandemic is over. They're in the endemic phase and they're kind of dealing with, some of them are still doing really crazy things, and some never got in at all. And so we're giving a little break from that talk for a little bit, but it's time to kind of dive in, because there's a lot of conversations happening around the world There's a lot of information coming out for those of you who are interested. The Pfizer dumps, if you don't know about that, that's where the documents that Pfizer gave in to get the emergency use authorization for their product was sent in to the FDA for approval. And that document is hundreds of thousands of pages. And there's a group in the United States that actually got legal authority to see get those documents released, and they're being released over time. Insight into what stimulated them thinking that, you know, that process of vaccination would be best for us. And it's quite interesting because of the law. It's obvious, it's very difficult to believe that they read all of that information, since they said that it would take them years to divulge the information, just release it. So think about them reading these hundreds of thousands of pages of technical medical data. And what people are finding is that a lot of stuff doesn't add up. And they're just kind of wondering how a lot of this stuff happens. So we're very behind. I always say that our health policy, what's going on here, is about 6 months behind the rest of the world and what's happening. And in terms of the information that's coming out, I think, you know, we need to start getting a little bit more ahead in terms of those things. And so we're going to listen to that. If you know about what's happening in Canada, Canada was under really strict lockdowns for quite some time. They really went really wild about this COVID thing. And they, at one point, they had also, they weren't even letting in their own residents who were not vaccinated. And they kind of slackened up on that a little bit. And some of their doctors, some of their scientists are now saying to them, look at the things that you've been doing. It doesn't really make sense. It's time for us to learn from all the information that's coming in and to make different decisions, because there is some clear-cut information out there that we seem to be ignoring. And this seems like a very logical and sensible way of looking at things, that you would now go over the information that you have and make the kind of rational decisions that make sense. And so I thought it was important to kind of see this video. And so I'm gonna let the producer, I hope you have a producer, we could play that video along, but she just kind of talks about what's happening there, their expectations, because they wrote a letter to the government just pretty much saying, hey, look at the recent data, look at all the information that's out there, and you can see that some of the things you're doing doesn't make sense at this point in time, and it's time to remove some of those things. In particular, she's talking about travel restrictions and the issues they have with the non-vaccinated traveling back and forth through Canada and even within certain areas through Canada. And so she kind of lays it out on the line, because the reporter who's talking to her, and this is a clip from CBC, which is the Canadian Broadcasting Center that they have over there. And so this is kind of mainstream news. And so she's questioning, why would they send this to their authorities? And she kind of lays out her reasoning, which I think most of it, and we can talk about it after the clip is done, most, we can kind of go through where maybe any issues that we may have. But she gives a pretty fair assessment, and she doesn't go really onto any extreme or the other. She just kind of lays out the facts as she sees them and tries to take a reasonable position on that particular issue. And I thought it was interesting to see that we're seeing a lot more physicians, a lot more scientists being extremely vocal on this topic, and just kind of getting tired of following policies that don't make any logical sense. We've been kind of lucky in the Bahamas. We had it pretty decent, not too bad. We had lockdowns, but some countries really, there were some extreme things happening. And so she's coming from the Canadian point of view. Producer, let me know if you have that clip. And we're definitely going
to. A group of doctors has written an open letter to the federal government. They say it's time to get rid of Canada's remaining travel restrictions. Infectious diseases expert is one of the authors, and I asked her about their argument that the federal government policies lag behind the science.
Well, I think it's time, 2.5 years into this, to look at what we currently know in the current situation, which is clearly very different than it was at the beginning, and ask honestly, if we look at our situation as a society and what we know about COVID now, is whether any of these restrictions are still doing anything useful in terms of controlling transmission. And the, what we looked at, for example, is right now in our society, we have a very high degree of population immunity. It's a combination of people who've chosen to be vaccinated and people who've had COVID and recovered, or a bit of both, what some people are calling hybrid immunity, which is very, very high. And that's very reassuring, because that does mean that at a population level, the risk of sort of a massive public health emergency is really not there anymore. And so if we're talking about that, then we need to ask, why are the public health restrictions in place, and are they still required or doing anything? And I think when we looked at that, we were saying, well, for travel, it's time to revisit, knowing what the situation we're in now, and saying, no, it's safe and reasonable to stop them now. And given that not only are they probably not doing anything from a public health perspective, but they're adding to some of the chaos that we're starting to see, it would probably be helpful to revisit whether or not they're necessary. And our argument was that they're not necessary anymore.
Dr. Fulford, you know that many will disagree with you, including in the medical field, saying that this is these restrictions are appropriate, that they're necessary to help our communities stave off infections, stave off the spread. Better to be safe than sorry. And isn't that a fair argument? Better to be safe than sorry?
Well, I mean, at a certain point, safer. But no, I think, remember, we're talking right now about the role of these restrictions for travel. Mm-hmm. And so we need to sort of piece it down and make sure we're not getting ourselves confused in terms of what we're saying. And so at the moment, it's very clear that vaccines, when we talk about the role of vaccines, for example, it's important to look at what vaccines do and what they don't do. And in the context of travel, what they clearly do not do is stop transmission. I mean, we've seen that. Look at Dr. Fauci right now, for vaccines and still has COVID. And it's not to say that there's no role for the vaccines, obviously. It's simply to say that if the reason that we're requiring vaccination or proof of vaccination for people entering the country, or if they don't have that, they have to be quarantined, then that doesn't make sense, because we know that people who've been vaccinated or not vaccinated are both likely to transmit the virus. And so that's really not an effective intervention. This is not our scene. It's simply, in this setting, is it a useful thing to do? And I think we have to be honest and say at this point, no, it's not. And also testing travelers. Again, this is not to say that there's no role for testing ever, but if the rationale for testing travelers, which was suspended, but now it looks like it's going to be off-site, is to try to track new variants, we have other more effective ways of doing that, and both effective in terms of probably catching them and in terms of cost. And so again, it's just looking specifically at, are these interventions useful in the context of travel?
Have you gotten any response from federal officials as to the arguments that you and your colleagues are presenting?
No. But again, I mean, we're putting it out there. But no, I haven't. In fact, I would say they seem pretty committed to continuing with the current sort of path they're on.
Well, I know that you're not a member of the government, but what's your best assessment? Why, as disease specialist, as are your colleagues who have been specializing, working in the field of health, and you all feel this way, then why are elected officials who don't necessarily have a medical background pushing forward in this other direction?
I don't know that I know the answer for exactly what studies the government's looking at, or what data they're basing what they're doing on. And I guess our plea to the government is this not about looking back and whether what we did in the past was right or wrong. It's not about personal feelings about it. It's about looking at where we're at right now, the studies. And also, we can look at international jurisdictions to be very reassured that we're not premature doing this. We would be one of the very, very last countries to lift travel restrictions. And so we know, looking around the world, we can look at almost all of Europe right now, that it is safe to lift these travel restrictions, and that it won't be a disaster from the COVID perspective if we do that. I think it's our plea is, can we revisit these restrictions in light of the studies that have recently been published, as well as the international data that we can look at?
Okay, Dr. Fulford, before I let you go, I just wanted to read to you the summary of the piece that you all printed, saying federal COVID-19 policy continues to lag the science. It doesn't follow it. And the question now is whether the spin doctors, not the medical doctors, are making policy. pretty harsh, Doc. Why did you all write that?
I think we're trying to sort of get people to really open their eyes. It's really time to revisit where we're at with this. And instead of just carrying on along the same path without, you know, it's easy to not change. I think, you know, these measures got put in place. And sometimes it's easier to do nothing and just carry on doing it than to actually have the courage to say, you know what, we don't need them anymore. And it's okay. And we're all going to be fine. I guess it's not, these aren't based on medical science anymore. They're not based on the current data. They're not based on what we're seeing in the literature. And so the question is, why are we doing it? And I really hope it's not based on polls or popular opinion. It really should be based on what's the best thing we can do for the health and the well-being and the economy of our country. And these are all intimately linked. And I think it's time to revisit.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for revisiting it with us.
Thank you very much.
Dr. Martha Fulford is an infectious diseases specialist in Hamilton, Ontario.
Okay, so you can see they're calling for a review of everything that we know, all the new information that's come out, and how do we now kind of get back to the sense of normal. She mentioned some really key things that, you know, being vaccinated doesn't stop you from getting COVID. We're quite aware. She mentioned Dr. Fauci, and we'll kind of talk about what happened. And also right here at home, we've seen, one of our past prime minister, he just had COVID and he's vaccinated and I believe boosted. So at some point, we have to face reality that transmission can be by anyone, and that we've gone through these different variants at this time, and we have a pretty mild variant currently that people aren't getting hospitalized as much as often. And I'm not saying to totally just be not vigilant about what's happening. I really think that we should be looking at how do we deal with early treatment, things that we've talked about before. But we have that type of data to kind of back up the fact that a lot of the things that we did just did not work, did not make sense, and are not relevant today. But just like Canada, we also have some restrictions and different things that we are still keeping up with. And the question becomes now is why? What is the reason? A lot of these things, I know people are saying to be cautious, but you say we're relying on science and the science tells you that these things just don't work. At what point then, and I've called for this before, because what are the parameters that we are using to measure when we make changes? It seems a lot to be international pressure or pressure from the hotels or different places, rather than really the facts and the science. So there has to be some way of really getting them to fall in line with what they say that they're doing. You hear the mentions of the word science, but do you actually see the science? All right, comment online, Mr. Gibson. There's new, their new science must be discriminatory. Yes, very discriminatory. The science is never discriminatory. It is human bias that tends to be discriminatory. What the science says is that anybody basically can catch COVID. If you are a person that is less healthy and have multiple comorbidities, and I've said this from the beginning, you're more at risk of not doing well. If you're healthier, if you're younger, if you're a child, then you know your risk really, really drops. And so we are still doing a lot of things that the rest of the world is not doing. And, you know, so what is the reason behind that? And why are we doing it? And does it make sense? And are people ready to move on? Or is it that people in the Bahamas are not ready to move on and that they want to continue with these because they're afraid, they don't understand? What is the meaning of it and why is it being done? I'm going to open up the phone lines and then we're going to talk about a little bit what happened. So 323-6232-325-4316, 325-4259. If you want to join in the conversation, do you think that we are behind? Our policy seems to be behind the science, just like some of these other Western countries. In other places, we're seeing that they're kind of moving along quite nicely, and they've kind of gotten rid of all these restrictions. They've looked at the science. They've even looked at the boosters and the way that they can drop immunity. And so why aren't we having these discussions? We seem to be still in 2021 or 2000 or late 2020 when we didn't have as much. So we're a lot more open, and I'm thankful. I think our leaders right now have been a lot better in terms of moving forward, but we still seem to be hanging on to some things that are not science. So 323-625-4316, 325-4259. So amongst one of the things she mentioned was that Dr. Fauci had recently gotten COVID and he had what we call a rebound. So we're going to talk about what that is and what does that really mean and how did he get it? So he's had four vaccinations. He's had at least two of the shots and two more as boosters. And so he recently caught COVID. So I'm going to look at this article. It's coming from a medical journal called WebMD. And it talks about what happened with him. And so the title of this particular article is Fauci says he had Paxlovid rebound worse symptoms. So he actually got COVID. He thought that he got better. And then, of course, his symptoms returned and he actually came back positive. So how did that happen? So according to the article, on June 30th, 2022, Anthony Fauci, the chief medical advisor to the President Joe Biden, said that he went through what we call a Paxlovid rebound, and that can occur after taking the antiviral to recover from COVID. So he had COVID and he took an antiviral drug that's created by Pfizer. This is Pfizer who also created the vaccine. And they have an antiviral drug that they made. More so they were saying for persons who were not vaccinated, if they got really, really sick, they made it for that. But what you're finding is a lot of persons who are actually vaccinated and they have gotten COVID, they're actually taking Paxlovid, even though that's not really what it's supposed to be used for. So as you can see here, he actually used it kind of off-label in a sense, because if you look at the studies for this drug have not been vaccinated. So here is a guy who's had four vaccinations and he went and he took this antiviral drug. And he says the symptoms that he had after he completed the treatment were more severe than those that he had from the coronavirus itself. He said, after I finished the 5 days of the Paxlovid, I reverted to negative on an antigen test for the 3 days. So for 3 days back to back, this doctor, Dr. Fauci, he basically had a negative testing on his antigen test. And he decided, I don't know why he was doing all this testing. Maybe he wasn't feeling well, but he tested again, and on the fourth day when he tested again, he basically got a positive test. So he got a positive test, and he wasn't feeling very well, and he started another round of this drug, which is another thing that's not advised, but he did it anyway. So some weird stuff going on with Doc. We have a caller, you're on the air.
Yes, good afternoon, Dr. DiArcho.
Hi, good afternoon.
Yeah, I wanted to make a statement, and it's kind of strange and scary what our government is doing. And it's also kind of discriminatory, if I said that correct.
Yes.
Florida Governor Ron DeSantis, he had a cocktail monoclonal antibody drug. I don't ever remember us having something like that here in the Bahamas. And the reason why it's kind of upsetting is because it's like, allow people to choose. Just allow people to choose. What is it or who is it our government is listening to that they are not allowing Bahamian citizens to make personal decisions concerning their health? It's very upset. I don't understand it. What are we doing here in the Bahamas? Florida is right next door to us. What are we doing? Who are we listening to? Because it cannot be science that our government, our so-called educated government, is listening to.
Yeah, I mean, I totally agree. I think, you know, even if they were advised earlier on, there's enough time and there's enough evidence out there for them to have made a decision. I don't want to get political. I know the Prime Minister was heading in that direction, and somehow we still have restrictions against the unvaccinated and a lot of masking requirements. I think it's a lot about choice. I was in Florida last year. People were doing what was best for them. Some people wore a mask, some people didn't wear a mask, some people were getting vaccinated, some people were not getting vaccinated. It was pretty much business as usual, and you can see their economy never changed. Caller, I'm going to answer your question about the monoclonal antibodies and what happened there, because that was a very interesting thing. So even my clinic, and I tried multiple channels to get monoclonal antibodies into the country. I don't want to give a shout out to them, but anyway, Doctors Hospital, I think they tried too. I'm not sure if they were successful. The problem came in was Florida was using it a lot. Texas was using it a lot. Even at the time in 2020, Trump had gotten monoclonal antibodies. That's what he got when he was in hospital. Now, what happened when the new president took over is he decided that he was going to control the distribution of all of that monoclonal antibody that was in the United States. So those particular drugs actually started being restricted, and it was almost impossible for us to import that here, and we had difficulty. I'm not sure if the government ever tried to do it themselves, but me as a private physician, multiple other private physicians that were looking at early treatment modalities, we all tried, and our private hospital, I believe they tried as well. I'm not sure if they got a few vials and treated a few people, but it was a very difficult thing. And so that was what happened with that. So I don't know if you're gone, caller, but thank you for your call. It's good to see what people are feeling, because sometimes you get the feeling that everybody is feeling one particular way or the other, when it may not be true. And I tell you that a lot of Bahamians, I think those who wanted to take the vaccine have done so. I think our government should actually be lobbying United States restrictions off of the vaccine requirement for Bahamians, because we have a multitude of their people that are coming in vaccinated, unvaccinated into our country and going back home with our close relationship. I think that courtesy should be extended there. I think the rules should be gone, but we can't dictate everything that America does. But I do think that with all our lobbying ability and our good relationship with the U.S., that this is something, if they wanted to do it, I think this is something that they could make happen. And this would make lives a lot easier, as well as removing any discriminatory practices here in the Bahamas, because the evidence is not on their side. So I'll give out the numbers one more time, and then we're going to go back to this article talking about what happened with Dr. Fauci in the U.S. And those numbers are 323-6232, 325-4316, 325-4259. And so we were talking about this Paxlovid, which is this antiviral drug that Pfizer came out with, and Dr. Fauci basically took it more than once, more than he's supposed to. He's been vaccinated 4 times. He caught COVID, and I think he's had COVID before. So it just shows you it is not a respecter of people, and that status that people are laminating and doing all these things with really doesn't mean a whole lot in terms of transmission. If you want to say that it does other things, you know, you can come with that ideal in proof, but we also know that efficacy is very low and short lived as well, hence why multiple boosters. But in Europe, they've kind of stopped with the multiple boosters because of what they found was happening with people who were getting these boosters very close to each other. And so we as a country do not need to kind of follow suit. We can look at what happened elsewhere and kind of make that determination that we don't need to go down a similar road, so we can learn from others, right? Because like I said, our policy, our information seems to be about 6 months behind. So we were going through this article on WebMD, and we see here that he actually took a second course of this Paxlovid, and his symptoms came back, and they were much, much worse. And why I'm talking about this is because I see some people trying to talk about bringing this drug into the country, and I'm kind of wary of that. The monoclonal antibodies that I thought probably were very useful, we had a hard time bringing it in. This drug seems to be considering bringing it in. Caller, you're on the air.
Hi, Dr. D. How you doing?
Hey, I'm good, thank you. How are
you? We haven't spoken for quite some time, but I always enjoy listening to your program.
Awesome.
I'd just like to make a contribution here. You know, the concerns still with this coronavirus and, you know, having our visitors and those on the outside, you know, given the permission to come in with and not wearing masks or anything like that, but yet Bahamians are being asked to still wear masks. It's good to see the relaxations that are in place thus far. I still pretty much very much concerned after listening to many persons in the medical profession who would have stated that apparently these masks doesn't make a difference whether you wear the mask or not. And so from that standpoint, I would like to find out from you if there are or were any studies done to prove or disprove the claim. And then secondly, in my last question would be that has there, and I think I asked this before, has there been any studies going forward now for persons who have perhaps may have had have some type of lung damage or have some type of pulmonary situations with wearing these masks? Has there been any chronic outcomes to those persons or any long-term effects as it pertains to wearing these masks over prolonged periods of time and persons have developed lung problems? Thanks for taking my call.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, caller. Thank you so much. I will tell you, if you're wearing a cloth mask, it doesn't work. There's basically no data that cloth masks work. I think the numbers were something like a 10 or 20% decrease in transmission of particles. But, you know, that's neither here nor there. I think the producer's telling me to take a break, but let me just answer this question quickly and then we'll go. So you will see that the only studies that show some form of assistance would be the N95s. You'll see maybe doctors mostly wearing those masks. They have to be worn perfectly and correctly every minute that you're using them, and it's only really for short periods. So if you're just walking around in your cloth mask or your surgical mask or any other mask, really we found that they're pretty much not very useful. So this whole idea of masking, unless we all were wearing N95 masks all the time and constantly changing them, then doesn't really make a difference. And I'll answer your other question after we come back from the break. The producer's prompting me to take one. All right, we'll be right back on The Doctor's In with me, Dr. D. Stick with us.
Accelerator Small Business Development Center is here to help small businesses throughout the entire Bahamas. To better serve you, we've made it easier to contact us. Call 461-7232, WhatsApp 359-0626 or 359-2394, email helpdesk@sbdcbahamas.com or submit a ticket when you visit our help center at accessaccelerator.org. The Access Accelerator, empowering small business.
Frank, what you doing?
Looking at some new insurance options, Uncle Joe.
Insurance? You should ask me. I've got a guy on Collins Avenue who does my motor insurance. My home policy is through a lady I work with. Now, Johnny from the gym, he's going to hook me up with medical and life. Now, for pensions, I'd like to spread that one around a little.
Or I could call CG Atlantic. They do all of that.
With all the insurance and pensions cover you need in one place, we're like CG Atlantic. Good like that.
Hello and welcome back to The Doctor Is In with me, Dr. Janothor Archer. We're talking about various topics on COVID. We had a question on whether masks work. And I'll just read a little snippet from an article from USA Today. It says, your cloth mask isn't protecting you against the coronavirus variant Omicron, health officials say. As common as cloth masks, face masks have become, health experts say they do little to prevent tiny virus particles from getting into your nose or your mouth or aren't effective against especially this new variant. Cloth masks are not going to cut it with Omicron, says Lindsay Marr, a researcher at Virginia Tech, told NPR. Health experts are urging the public to opt for a three-ply surgical mask and N95 mask, which offer more protection against a highly contagious variant. Omicron spreads more quickly, efficiently than other coronavirus variants and extreme transmissibility. Even though the thick fabric face mask, several countries such as Germany and Austria have surgical mask requirements in public. So the type of mask depends on the level of protection, with the cloth mask probably being the lowest. And of course, because they're being made by different people, there is really no standard. So those are kind of like bottom tier. Your surgical mask, you're going to get a little bit more coverage, but I know that 90% of people don't wear those properly. And then you have your N95 masks, which are going to be the best that you're going to wear from your high risk. This would be probably a better mask for you just to kind of increase just particle transmission. You have to understand, if you look at the Asians and the Chinese and those, when they wore masks for viral illnesses in the past, the mask was really for persons who were sick. And so those persons were able to contain their respiratory droplets a lot better rather than this ice. And so this is kind of the first time where, we're just having this massive amount of people wearing masks in public. And so what they found is these things don't really put a dent in how the virus is transmitted. You're looking at very low numbers overall of less than 10%, 5%, 1% in different studies that I've seen. So that's why a lot of countries aren't really bothering anymore. Even in the US that has that you have to be vaccinated to go inside the country, their own residents, vaccinated, unvaccinated, a lot of those states have removed the mask mandates for that very reason. So it's very unusual that we allow people into the country and we tell them that they don't have to wear masks in particular areas, especially the hotels. Well, but then, Bahamians have to wear it well. So that's my issue. I don't believe in any form of discrimination. And if it doesn't have anything to back it up, what are we doing? So some comments online before we get back to what we were talking about. And was there another question from the gentleman? Oh, he asked also about any studies on things that are complications of wearing. I haven't seen too many that have said much about a complication specifically wearing just the mask. You're going to do okay if you're wearing a mask. It's just uncomfortable. And if you have any kind of breathing or lung problems, it's going to be uncomfortable. If you look at the U.S., people were getting exemptions from wearing masks who had already had lung issues and different problems, because just having to breathe, find that some people would have difficulty breathing, especially if they're going to be in a situation for a very long time. That didn't go over well in the midst of the pandemic when people were really into wearing a mask. So there was a lot of conflict because of that. But some people were not wearing a mask at that time either. I would say that I think a lot of, I don't enjoy wearing a mask. I'll wear it because we have to, but as soon as we don't have to, I'll probably take it off in most circumstances. I work in healthcare, so there's certain circumstances that I might just keep it on, but I do believe in having that choice. Now, I think what the big problem is masks are mostly disposable. And I don't think anyone is perfect with disposing those masks. And the cloth masks, if you're wearing a cloth mask, you should be washing it every day. I think I've talked about this before. So if you're not, you can understand that your own bacteria and environment is breathing in that. And I think that's where a lot of the problems are going to lie, because I'm pretty sure people aren't washing their mask every day, or at least changing their mask out every day. So in my opinion, I think that's where the bacterial infections and other things come from. The other problem that I have with masks is, where are they all coming from? So There's a lot of variations of masks that have come into the country from China and different places, and not all of them have the same consistency and quality. Some of them I've even found have weird odors. I don't know what it is. And if you look on the back, you think it's just cloth material, but sometimes there's chemicals inside some of these masks, depending on how they're produced. And so I would have questions on that. I did see a doctor who was talking a little bit about some of the contents sometime in early in the pandemic, but there wasn't really a lot of extensive studies since, you know, we were kind of all just frantic and things were happening. So I think there was a missed opportunity of looking at the information. So comments online, allow people to go on with their lives. Restrictions aren't helping. They are only hindering. Agreed. The other comment online is Omicron was a blessing in disguise. I personally believe that Omicron helped the world reach a type of herd immunity. I do as well. And what also you had with Omicron is you had basically we had come to a point where a good chunk of people had been vaccinated and a lot of those people got Omicron as well. So I think that allowed a lot of them to see that, not that I want anyone to have it, but I think that allowed people to see that, you know, this thing was something that was going to happen and your status and that you needed to protect yourself either way. And so I think that put us all back into the same boat. And it was so many people that got sick that in a sense, if you could get any kind of herd immunity, that's where it would be. And what we've been seeing from studies is that the immunity from naturally catching COVID lasts quite a while, at least over 12 months, which is a lot longer than the efficacy that we're seeing with the drugs. And so that means a lot of people are covered for quite some time. And I think that's why we've had numbers that have kind of gone up, but it's not been super, super crazy because most people have kind of had COVID at this point, experienced it, been in the home with someone, if not being personally diagnosed with it. And so we've all really come really close. Sadly, you know, some people didn't do as well, but I do believe that early treatment would have been a lot more helpful to people if it had been widely available, if you were able to talk about how do we treat this viral illness ahead of time before people went into the hospital and really kind of safeguarding our vulnerable people. So I'm going to throw out the phone lines one more time in case there's anyone else that wants to jump in. 323-6232, 325-4316, 325-4259. We're just going to finish off this article with what happened with Dr. Fauci, because I think this is key to see that there's almost a sense of hypocrisy where some medications are being used quite off-label because it's coming from a particular source. And then some of the medications that people were trying to use early in the pandemic, they were really kind of demonized and pushed aside, and they could have been extremely useful. So when do we follow science, when we do not follow science? That seems to be up to the powers that be, which brings in a sense of bias, and we don't want that in science. We want the clear cut truth as much as possible. That's why we do scientific theory, and that's why we test things, and that's why we analyze to try to get the human factor and feeling out of a lot of information to get clear cut information. And that's the science that I know about. So on the fourth day, basically after taking this drug, he tested himself again, and he was once again positive. He began taking a second course of Paxlovid when the symptoms returned, which were much worse than the first go around. So first of all, he's had four doses. He got sick with COVID. He took an antiviral that was not meant for, he got COVID again. He started another round. So that's a lot going on there. He later said that Paxlovid kept him out of hospital, he said, and stopped his infection from becoming more severe when he first tested positive on June 15th. So he had actually been dealing with that for quite some time. By the time he had tested positive, he had already had COVID for about 2 weeks. And so he's basically saying that he thinks it kept him out of hospital. We would never know. And that's the interesting thing about looking at these drugs, when you do look at the details of their studies, you don't see a lot of difference between what the drug does and placebo. Is where I like to get the depth of my information, not really the what we call the conclusions, because I find that today, depending on who's writing the conclusions, there can be some bias in the way that it's written. You need to look at the raw data. And when you look at the raw data, you find that some of these drugs aren't as useful as it's being portrayed. So I do have an issue with this drug, and I'm looking out for it because you've had quite a few people coming out with this rebound and having issues with this drug. And so out of all the things that, you know, we are looking at in terms of treatment, why would this be the one that physicians would focus on and push? I don't understand. So Fauci, who's 81 years old, so he's really in the high-risk group, was prescribed Paxlovid due to his age, which put him at greater risk for severe COVID-19. So he still has the same risk profile as he did, even though he is vaccinated. He had been fully vaccinated and received two boosters. The Global Health Forum, which Fauci attended, public health experts from around the world, they talked about COVID and the vaccines and the post-pandemic priorities, which is to strengthen the healthcare system, the healthcare workforce, HIV, AIDS, pandemic, cancer, antibiotics, antimicrobials, equitable healthcare in preparation for any other health emergencies, which I think is extremely important if we're gonna have some type of silver lining to all of this, is for us to focus on healthcare, not just as people and individuals, but as a community and as a country. We see how important healthcare and especially primary healthcare, and I'm a primary healthcare specialist, that's why I prefer to keep you well, not have you sick, all right? So that's my job, keep you well, not sick. Although I see people who already have illnesses and, you know, but we try to keep you as healthy as possible. And really that should be the main goal when it comes to health. So I tell you all of this because I do think that we need to take another look at the pandemic, everything that's happened, and reassess where we are, remove some of these discriminatory issues that we may have, and address this from a very rational point of view. The point of view that we have to look out for all of our health, and we have to do what's going to be best for our people, both our health system, our economy, and just people in general. So we're just going to finish off the article before we go, because time flies. So he said he would like to see a study that compares the 5-day course of the Paxlovid to a 10-day course to see if you can prevent rebound. So he's still advertising for that drug. And he thinks that he didn't want people to be confused about the rebound. Don't confuse that with the original purpose of what Paxlovid is meant for. It's not meant to prevent you. It's meant to prevent you from being hospitalized. So he's taking the fact that he took a drug that he wasn't supposed to take. He had a second course of COVID, and he wants you to completely forget that and just focus on the fact that he didn't actually end up in the hospital, although he got more sick. There's this thought of pushing this idea that people naturally have a rebound of COVID, but I don't think so. Like, I think that you get over it and you have antibodies for quite some time. So to get some type of rebound, and it's only happening in patients, another physician actually was showed me a few studies today which looked at the fact that it was mostly happening in persons who had actually taken the vaccine. So now we need to look at those persons, because as the initial study for this drug was for persons who had not taken the vaccine. So maybe they need to look at what's happening in these patients who are taking it kind of off label. And maybe that's where the problem lies. But Paxlovid doesn't get a thumbs up for me so far. I'm still watching this drug, and I'm very curious to see why it's being pushed, other than the branding of who is producing it. And so I don't think that we should do things based on any particular brand. We should look at how it is affecting the community, the people who are taking the drug, and what side effects that are coming up that may be happening more. So I looked at 13 things to know about this drug. And this is one of the things that they talked about. They talked about the side effects, and one of the main side effects being rebounds of COVID. So this is nothing new. This is almost like expected. Also, the other side effects would be altered, impaired sense of taste, diarrhea, increased blood pressure, muscle aches. It's cleared by the kidney. So they talk about the fact that, you know, you have to be careful using this drug in patients who have a kidney problem, people who have mild to moderate kidney disease, for patients who have any kind of severe kidney disease, or who are on dialysis. It's also not recommended for persons on blood thinners. And it interacts with quite a few other drugs. Some of them may not be known. There's a whole fact sheet on this particular drug. And so, like with the newer drugs, I really believe that they need time. And as we can see, he's a very prominent person to be having issues with it. And so I'm hoping that this is not one of our go-to types of things, even though I know we tend to bring in a lot of the products that are pushed in America. We have to think about what we're seeing there with their population and how it will affect our population. The also thing is, this drug was not tested on patients who had gotten Omicron. We have to remember that when we started the pandemic, we had what we call the wild type of this infection. This was just the first phase of what was introduced to the human body. And over time, we've had various changes or different types of coronavirus, COVID-19, over this course of time. So the one that's going around most often, the Omicron, is basically never been tested for a lot of these things, including the vaccine. So we have here that they're claiming that it does work for this, but it's actually never been tested for this. And this is an interesting thing that I've seen in the pandemic, is they will take a study that is not reflective of what's happening at the time, and they will deduce that somehow it can be used as data or information that would apply to what's happening in the current situation. And this is really an odd thing. I think it's because this moved really quickly, but you know, to go back and take a look at that would be probably the wisest thing, and to not to draw conclusions from evidence that you don't have. But I saw this quite a bit during the entire pandemic, where they did that and then it was gospel and then they were found to be incorrect. So that is one of the things that also was a red flag to me, that it's not been tested. It also has not been tested in children. However, it's clear that they are using it in children once they make the weight requirement of 88 pounds. So quickly, we have one last caller. Caller, you're on the air. You've got 2 minutes.
Please hang up and try your call again.
Sorry, caller, if you can call back really quickly, we'll take your call. I may have been talking for a while, so I didn't see it. So you want to come back to us. You've got 1 minute to kind of provide us what you were thinking about. But yes, this is the drug that Dr. Fauci used. I'm seeing people talking about bringing it in the country. I'm not sure about this drug. There are some other issues, even though they have this FDA approval. There's a lot of things about how this drug was tested that aren't relevant to right now. And so I'm kind of concerned about what I'm seeing. So the numbers that they report usually is in a particular population, let's say a healthy unvaccinated population, and then they're using the drug in maybe unhealthy people or persons who are vaccinated or children. That is a bit of a stretch. We usually don't do that. And this was the concern that they had for relatively safe drugs such as hydroxychloroquine and other drugs throughout the pandemic. And it's kind of odd that they don't have the same concern with this particular drug. And so those are my concerns. I guess we did lose that last caller. I'm sorry about that caller. I didn't see you, but those are things to think about. Are we totally behind in our health policies as it is pertaining to COVID-19? Should we be reassessing where we are? Should we be removing those restrictions? And why do we have discriminatory practices that are not backed by science? Should we be wary of various drugs that are coming in? And should we start doing our own studies on our own population to see where we are? The doctor did, Dr. Fulner did think in her little interview that they were aware of the level of antibodies in their community. So that's the type of testing, the type of study, the type of analysis we need to make the correct decisions for us here in the Bahamas. But I think it's time to live with it and move on. And I want to thank all of you for listening tonight. So with me, the doctor is in with Dr. Dinotra Archer-Cartwright. I'll see you all next week.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM, Nassau, Bahamas.